The Monty Show, rocking a Tuesday with some Reliant K. I'm Monty, that's Jake. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show on Twitter. Got a lot to get to today. We're about 20 minutes away from a huge game for BYU. Gonzaga in the WCC final. We have got Oklahoma City, Houston tonight. Yu Darvish was on the hill for the Cubs today. I mean, it's all good. I want to start the show today with a little NBA Western Conference hoop. I think there's a bunch of really good stories in the NBA Western Conference. I think the fact that you have a bunch of teams that are jumbled up at the bottom of the West. And when I say jumbled up, I don't know how many people actually do what I do, and I'm a nerd, and I freely admit this.
Nerd.
I do check the standings in the NBA on a fairly regular basis. So I feel like the Western Conference is way more compelling than the East most of the time. You have the third-place Portland Trailblazers, 12 games back, but only 2.5 games up on eighth-place Denver. 3 games up on 9th place Clippers, and 4 games up on the 10th place Jazz. I mean, that the Western Conference is incredibly tight this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NBA on the whole is very tight this season. There isn't a huge gap. I think it's interesting. One of the better storylines has been, you know, Rockets and Warriors at the top. Who's going to get that one seed? I think that's been a nice storyline as opposed to last season where it was the Warriors and everybody else. And we all knew it was going to be Warriors, Cavs, and that's a nice little narrative. I think this year at the top of both conferences you have, you know, Warriors, Rockets, and then in the East you have Toronto, the Celtics, and Cleveland.
Yeah.
And the whole, I mean, we've talked about Cleveland ad nauseum on this show. I just love the fact that there's now, instead of like 3 teams, there's like 5 to 7 teams that are actually in the conversation about making noise in the playoffs.
Best team, not the Rockets or Warriors, but who's the best team in the rest of the West? We saw a Portland Trailblazer team last night that went straight at, it seemed, the L.A. Lakers, had a dogfight in Los Angeles, and Damian Lillard, your boy, and I like Dame a lot. If he was anywhere else, I think he'd be a perennial MVP candidate, but he's in Portland. He went right at the Lakers, and he wound up winning the game for them. I mean, who's the best of the rest in the West?
I think Portland's not right there for me. I don't know. That's a tough decision. I find myself in the West. I find myself following the top 2-3 teams, and then I find myself following the tanking teams like the Suns. Like, who's going to be the worst in the West? That's what I find myself talking about. And everybody else just kind of falls in line. I think the Jazz are an interesting team because seemingly every year at this time, like this time last year on our show, we were talking about them competing with the Clippers for the I think it was the 6th seed in the West.
Do the Jazz make the playoffs?
I think after Quinn Snyder's little explosion last night and lighting the arena on fire, I think that team's got a little energy.
Don't pass that up yet. How about the fact that Quinn Snyder did that? He picked the right time to do that. They were winning.
Yeah, totally.
Game was out of reach. They were winning
garbage
that game.
Time.
Donovan Mitchell is the one who stepped in and kind of guided Quinn off the court after he was ejected. But I love seeing Quinn Snyder do that. I love him as a head coach. When he was hired by the Jazz, I thought it was a great hire. And I think through the time he's shown to be a really good coach, do the Jazz make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they have a good shot to make the playoffs at this point. I think the Jazz are one of those teams that, just like the Cavs had to go through it, I think the Jazz had to go through that, you know, 5 to 10 game span where you had to learn how to play together again because you got 2 new players that were really good and you know, so you have to figure that out. But I think at this point, after the Quinn Snyder thing, Donovan Mitchell has found his stride in the league, it seems like. So I think they have a lot going for them, and I like where they're at.
Well, and I like their schedule a lot. I like the fact that they are on this road trip that's Pacers, Grizzlies, Pelicans, back home for Detroit, Phoenix, Sacramento, Atlanta, then at Dallas, San Antonio, Golden State. So really, the month of March until they go to San Antonio, every one of those games I would expect them to win. And they are currently playing really well. They've won 4 out of their last 5. And I don't see any reason that they would fall off. So I think the Jazz have an excellent chance to make the playoffs. The question is, who's going to fall out of the top half of the West to make that happen? I think Denver is a team that is capable of doing that. Denver, I respect Denver. I like Denver as a basketball club, but I think they are a team that is remarkably inconsistent at times.
Yeah.
They'll play really good basketball most of the time. You'll see them, beat a team back-to-back like that Oklahoma City, Golden State little tryst that they did. But then they got to fight to beat teams like Phoenix. They lose back-to-back to Houston and the Clippers. Now they have Dallas, Cleveland, the Lakers, the Kings, and the Lakers again. So they've got a stretch of games here where three of those five games are going to be real fights.
Yeah.
For them. So I think Denver's there. I don't know what to make of Oklahoma City. What do you make of the Thunder?
They're just in this weird little stretch right now where they can't seem to win a lot of games and be not. They just seem to have the second half where they just win a lot of games. And it doesn't seem like they're doing that right at this moment. I think they have a lot of talent, and I think Paul George, more than anything, has headlined that team this year. I mean, obviously Westbrook is there and doing his thing, but I feel like Paul George has really had a showing out party since he's been in OKC. Like, when he was with the Pacers before the injury, I think everybody knew Paul George was an elite basketball player. But now he's come to OKC, and you've realized, well, this guy can really defend, and man, he can really handle the ball. I mean, he's really showed that.
Well, their schedule's not easy either, and I look at this because you got to remember, we are a little more than a month in a couple of days away from the end of the season.
Yeah.
And their schedule is Houston tonight, Phoenix, San Antonio, so two of three really difficult games, Sacramento at Atlanta, the Clippers, at Toronto, at Boston, Miami, Portland, at San Antonio,
yeah, man.
Denver, at New Orleans, Golden State, at Houston, at Miami, Memphis to end the season.
That's tough.
I think Oklahoma City is going to struggle. They're going to be within a game of missing the playoffs, in my opinion. Because I don't think I just think Carmelo Anthony is an odd fit there, and I think he gets in the way more than he helps.
Yeah.
If he was not on that team, I think they'd be better off. I hate to say that, but I think they'd be better off without him.
I think flow-wise, they would be better off. I think offensively, you're totally right. I mean, oddly enough, he just finds himself in awkward positions on the floor, and he ends up being the guy on the wing that's looking for the three ball instead of dominating the post like he were so accustomed to. And I think the biggest difference for him is that he's had to share the ball. Carmelo Anthony is a guy who needs the ball in his hand to really be effective, and
absolutely,
that's not the setup he's in OKC. And I think when you're playing with Westbrook and Paul George, those two guys have to get the ball. I mean, they're just better.
Well, I also think the Cavs are continuing to be an interesting story. This Kevin Love thing today, if you missed it, find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Kevin Love came out today and wrote a blog basically saying he had a panic attack and he's had a really tough fight in his life for the last stretch. And it started in early November. He had a panic attack that led to the Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade confrontation, ultimately the trade that burned that franchise down,
yeah,
and completely rebuilt them. Kevin Love left the arena early to deal with this panic attack that he didn't know was a panic attack because he'd never had one.
Yeah.
He went to the hospital, did the tests, he checked out fine. And Dwayne Wade and Isaiah Thomas got on him and criticized him for leaving early.
Yeah.
Now today he comes out and says that he's fighting panic attacks. He's now finally dealing with the death of his grandmother after all these years. That really impacted me.
Yeah, and I think the hardest part about the death of his grandmother, and he actually said this very specifically in the article, is that he didn't get a proper goodbye with his grandmother. It didn't work out that way for him. And so
she
that
was supposed to come to Minnesota, yeah, to visit him. She fell ill, canceled the trip,
yeah,
and then ultimately passed before he could get back home to see her.
Yep.
And it's something that weighed on his mind. But I think it's a remarkable admission from a guy like Kevin Love, who in the blog for the Players Tribune admitted that he has been an introvert and that he was ashamed and that he was a guy who liked to internalize things and handle things on his own, which, as you know, I'm a huge non-believer in.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're upset or if you're feeling something, or I think you need to, it's not that you should, I think it's vital that you talk about that with somebody, whether that's a therapist, your mom, your dad, your best friend, your girl, whoever it is. I think you have to talk about that. And Kevin Love was not that guy, and it really has damaged him. But now he's coming out of that fog.
Yeah.
It's just really interesting. It's an interesting look inside of how professional athletes work and how pride in men really impacts people.
Yeah, I was fascinated by it. There's a portion of this article where he specifically talks about that night where he left that game early, goes into the locker room, and is frantically looking through different lockers and areas of the locker room for something that he was never going to find. He straight up said that in the article. I was looking for something that I was never going to find. Like, yeah. I didn't know what I was looking for. And then he ends up passing out in the middle of the locker room on the floor. And he was so worried about, you know, this getting out and people knowing about it that none of his teammates knew what happened. They got him out of the building before anybody else knew what happened. So
and
like
he said what he told people was he had a migraine.
Yeah.
And he had to leave because he had this migraine.
So it was just such a pride thing for him growing up. The term he used was playbook.
This happened, by the way, this happened in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
He was fighting the panic attack in pregame. And he had never had one, so he didn't know what it was.
He didn't even know they were real.
But he was fighting it, and then during a timeout, he just went into full panic attack. And Tyronn Lue, the head coach, walked up to him and said, "Hey, is everything okay?" And Kevin just said to him, "I'll be right back," and he sprinted back to the locker room and passed out. And the next home game he played, he scored 31 points. So he's been fine. He broke his hand.
Yeah.
But he's been fine, and he's been seeing a therapist now.
Yeah.
And he admitted all of this today. I thought it was just a real fascinating look at it. And then watching the Cavs game last night and watching them with Larry Nance Jr. as the starter, I think this is an absolutely positively – this is a breakthrough moment for them. Because I've been saying since that trade – I have been advocating for Larry Nance Jr. to start for the Cavs.
Isn't Larry Nance right now what Tristan Thompson was a couple years ago? And when Tristan Thompson had all that energy and was rebounding and being this guy that got to all the dirty areas of the floor.
When he was BK?
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson, before Kardashian?
Mm-hmm.
He's married to a Kardashian. But Larry Nance Jr. is just on a different level athletically.
Totally.
He's a way better defender and a way better rebounder than Tristan
Thompson.
And he
has a little bit of a handle, too.
And now he's learning to shoot. Larry Nance Jr. has become a bit of a mid-range jump shooter. And I think that's really helping them. The question is, do you believe that the Cleveland Cavaliers have the time to gel with a month left in the season? Do they have the time to gel and come together? Because they really have some awkwardness. Like, Jordan Clarkson doesn't know what to do with the ball when he gets shut down.
He finds himself on the wing, and we see this several times a game with the Cavs. Jordan Clarkson will find himself on the wing with the ball, and you'll just see him looking around, like trying to. It's not as though he's just diagnosing what the defense is trying to do.
Yeah.
He's just trying to figure out what his teammates are going to do.
Or
what he should be doing.
Because the last 2 years with the Lakers, he just freelanced. He never was a system guy. And Jordan Clarkson's, you know, go-to is, well, I'll just score the ball.
And he's a prolific scorer.
Yeah, he's really good at scoring.
Yeah.
He can shoot. He can certainly get to the rack. But that's not how it works in Cleveland. They're systematic. They want the ball to go through LeBron. And it's just a foreign thing. So I look at the way they played last night. Larry Nance Jr. played 32 minutes, 9 of 15, 4 of 5 from the free throw line, 15 rebounds, 22 points. Like,
good
I mean,
night.
He balled
good night.
Out. Career highs. LeBron had 31. Rodney Hood had 13, although he was 0-2 from 3. They got good contributions off the bench from Jordan Clarkson, who was 5-10 and 11 points. Like, they played really well. And the reason that I'm so impressed with that win, not because it's the Pistons, who are not a very good team, but because I look at the fact that it was against Andre Drummond, who is a top-class center in this league.
Yeah.
I think that means something. I think that is a big deal that he was able to switch pick and rolls with Blake Griffin and hang with Blake Griffin on the switch of the pick and roll. I thought that was impressive from Larry Nance. Like, all of these things that you want to see from a big man, you're seeing from him, and I really like that. And I think that's a big deal for the Cavs. without Tristan Thompson, I actually think they're a better team.
Yeah, well, without Tristan Thompson and with Larry Nance, they're a better team.
And with Kevin Love, when Kevin comes back.
See, now that'll be the key. I don't think they'll have enough time as a team to accommodate Kevin Love coming back. He's going to play and everything, but I don't think they'll be at the top of the mountain as a team with him on the floor once he's back. I just don't think they'll have enough time.
But does Kevin Love need to integrate himself into this? Because he is a Cav already. He's on the championship team. He's good. He's boys with LeBron from all descriptions. LeBron James put out a nice tweet for him today. I don't think it's as big a deal as Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance trying to fit in with LeBron as it will be with Kevin Love trying to integrate himself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's J.R. Smith throwing that bowl of soup at a coach and getting a one-game suspension. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Love coming back from this broken hand, I think, is a luxury for the Cavs.
Oh, it is. It is.
And they will fit. I think they will fit together.
And it is true. He knows the sets. He knows the plays. He knows how LeBron likes to play. He understands all that already. So, yeah, I mean, it's not as though he's going to have to adjust to playing with a different superstar. I mean, Larry Nance is not a superstar yet, and Clarkson's obviously not a superstar. So I just think, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not as difficult as it may seem to be, but I do think there is still some challenge in it.
Yeah, I do. Hey, real quick, because I do want to get to BYU-Gonzaga coming up here in about an hour and 15 minutes, but what did you think of what Steve Kerr said? Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Warriors, said that one-and-dones who do not get drafted should be able to go back to college. I really like that.
It'd be the first time, in my opinion, that if that were to happen, that the college system would be doing something for the kid, doing something positive, going out of its way to do something positive for the player, for the student athlete.
Yeah. I love the idea. I wish that it would... I wish it'd be a thing where any player can pull out of the draft before it starts, right?
And go back, no
and
problem,
go back
no
to college, no problem. But if you go back to college, you have to stay. You have to stay until you're.
You got to graduate.
Yeah, you got to graduate. The one and done thing is a huge problem in the NBA because so many guys are flaming out, and they've got to do something. I really like this idea of the NBA. Networking with really talented scholastic players, so high school players. I was watching tape of LeBron James Jr., Bronny, today, who's 13 and is just dominating.
Baller, dude.
An elite passer Baller. Already. We know about all of these guys coming up this year going to college, whether that is Shareef O'Neal, whether that is Zion Williamson. Like, there's a wealth of talent that are going to be college freshmen next fall. The NBA needs to have a relationship with those guys, and they need to have a system that's an alternate to going to college. Whereas if you go to the G League, the problem is it pays you $26,000 a year, and you're not really...
It's not enough of a gain to do it. That's
the
problem.
I don't think it is, and I think...
It's not 100. Get it, if you get to six figures, I think that changes the game. But if you're just going to say, well, hey, you know, you can come to the G League... You can get all your experience as a professional going through the day-to-day and whatnot, and we'll pay you like 50 grand, let's say, or 26
But then are those players draft eligible? Because if you go and play in the G League...
Well, yeah, I think once you're in the G League, yeah.
But if you play in the G League, you're playing for an NBA team because every NBA team essentially has an affiliate. So if you're playing for an NBA team, are you their property? Which I don't think it should be.
Well, I think if the G League is going to be a linchpin in changing the NCAA landscape and giving players a way to, you know, to better use their talents, I think the G League needs to expand. It needs to be better funded. They need to.
That's for sure.
Like, there needs to be just a better platform for it. It needs to be more supported. And I think a lot of comparisons being drawn are like in English soccer. You have the academy system where you have all these different programs.
Youth academies
where players are getting trained up. And you see these guys come up, you know, at 18, 19 years old, and they're ready to go. They're ready to play, you know, Premier League football. So I think if you did something like that in the NBA, that could work. But I don't know how you install rules or create rules to prevent corruption. I don't know how you do that.
I don't know either, but I know that you have to do something other than nothing.
True.
And I think kids have to have a say in that.
Yeah.
you have to be able to work with both college and the kids. So the NCAA and the kids have to have a voice. Yeah, you have to have a voice from multiple fronts. So NBA owners, NBA players, NCAA institutions, high school players, like you have to have a voice and you have to be willing to fail. This is something I think is so important. If you're, even if you're an entrepreneur and you're a small business owner or whatever you do, if you are going to try something, you have to be willing to fail. And so many people are not willing to fail. So many people are not willing to ask for a job out of fear of somebody saying no. So many people are not willing to ask the hot chick to the senior prom out of fear of saying no. The NBA has to feel like they can. It's okay to fail at this system, because if we fail at this system, we'll tweak it and make it better. That's what has to be done, because the kids are suffering. Robert Swift is playing basketball in Spain now. The kid that, and I don't know how many people remember this, but Robert Swift was a high school kid that was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics, then later the Oklahoma City Thunder when they made their move. And he flamed out. He became a massive drug addict, a heroin addict, you know, just went through hell on earth. Now he's playing in not the top division in Spain. He's playing in the fifth division, which plays in small open gym style settings. And he played his first game the other night and played really well. We've got to avoid those guys. We've got to avoid LaMelo Ball going to Lithuania.
Right.
Like, those are the things we have to avoid.
Well, they're only doing that because there's not a better platform. There's not any kind of other avenue. Yeah. I mean, with LaMelo, that's a whole different situation. Obviously, LeVar, but...
But, like, LaMelo Ball should be in high school.
Well, yeah.
He should be in
high
school.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, sure, he should be in high school. And he should be dominating high school, and it would be, in my opinion, more beneficial for him personally to just keep dominating in high school, graduate high school, and then decide what the best path is for you. But
if you're Zion Williamson, and for those of you who don't know Zion Williamson, he's a hulking, massive human being.
Yeah.
He has his own ticket written. If Zion Williamson says, I want to sign with an agent and go play in China, he will go over there and he will be one of the best players in China.
Yeah.
He's that physically developed. If LeBron James Jr. wants to skip high school and go play in China, he will be a miserable failure. LaMelo Ball shouldn't be playing professional basketball. He should be going to high school. LeBron James Jr. should be going to high school. He's 13. Will he ever have to play college basketball? I don't know. Zion Williamson, I think, is going to Duke because he wants to.
He committed to Duke,
He wants to, right?
Yeah. Which is, I love that.
Kids at this level can write their own ticket, but they need somebody that is giving them viable alternatives. It's not trying to put their hand in their pocket.
Yeah.
So I really like Steve Kerr's idea. One and done should be able to go back to college and play and be eligible if he doesn't get drafted. If he goes back to college, in my opinion, he should have to stay all 4 years.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I agree with that, because at that point, you've played a year of college basketball. You're a pretty good basketball player if you thought you could be a one and done.
Yeah.
So my feeling is, hey, if you want to come out, great. You can go back to college after your first year, or you can go play overseas. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're not drafted, you're a global free agent.
Yep.
You can go write your own ticket. So I just love the idea. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY. The Monty Show. Hey, coming up here in about an hour, it's going to be BYU and Gonzaga in the WCC championship game. Will this be the last WCC championship game as we know it? Because you know that Gonzaga is being heavily recruited by the Mountain West. I have to think, and again, I know I said this yesterday, and I've said this probably 10 times in the last 2 weeks. Craig Thompson, the commissioner of the Mountain West, is an absolute boob. Like, the guy, he's just, in my opinion, he is a lot of bravado. And I think the way that he has poked the bear at BYU over football and them leaving the Mountain, and I wonder what that relationship's like. But the ultimate irony here is BYU knocks off St. Mary's the other night. Childs goes crazy, puts up a career high. They shoot 60-something percent from the floor. They play really well. I think it was clearly their best game of the year. Can they do that again against Gonzaga, who is being recruited to go to the Mountain West? Do you see the irony there? That these two teams are playing each other and both likely should end up in the Mountain West. Will they? I don't know. But there is some irony there.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me these kids don't know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think players, anytime there's an underlying story, the players know. I mean, the players know what's on the line. The players read the news clippings. I mean, that's just how it is. So, yeah, the players know. But I think at the end of the day, they're more focused on winning the game for the sake of winning the game in a title of sorts.
And for
BYU, their goal is getting to the tournament. I mean, and obviously that's Gonzaga's goal, but the BYU, it's been an underdog story. They shouldn't be here, and they're here. So now it's time to win a big game.
Dave Rose, I think, has been massively undervalued as a coach. Like, I can't even – I don't know how they're – I think they're 24-9. I don't know how they're 24-9. Like, that number in my mind is – I think BYU basketball, I'm like, they're 24-9. That's a really good season. They beat St. Mary's, who was 20th in the country. They're going up against Gonzaga. Is it Gonzaga or Gonzaga? I have screwed this up for 10 years.
How about Gonzaga?
I'm gonna say Gonzaga because that's what I like saying.
Okay.
And I routinely get my ass handed to me on Twitter over Gonzaga and Zaga. I'm sure it's Zaga because it's the Zags, but I don't like saying Gonzaga. I like saying Gonzaga. So that's what I'm gonna say. Sorry, Spokane. I just really like the way BYU played against St. Mary's, and I hope they can bring that in tonight. And it was funny watching SportsCenter. Dave Rose said that their reward for playing so well against St. Mary's and balling out and winning that game, our reward is Gonzaga. And I just said Gonzaga when I said I was going to say Gonzaga. The point is, Dave Rose said our reward is Gonzaga, and I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
But would you want it any other way?
No.
And it's just interesting, all the storylines around this team, the struggle that has been consistently keeping talent, keeping your best players in the program. You know, is this guy eligible? This guy's leaving early. This guy had a relationship with a supposed booster, and all of these distractions that have been around BYU basketball, this team has put together a pretty dang good season. And Childs is a really special player. I don't think anybody questions that. But are you going to get that same kind of performance tonight against a very good Gonzaga team? I would love to think you are, but I don't think you are. And if you're going to win this game, it's going to be in the 70s. Because I don't think that you can expect to score 80 points. I'd love to see this be a 70-68, 72-70 kind of game. Because if that's the kind of game this is, I think BYU's got an outstanding chance to win this game. Because if Childs plays as well as he did, if Bryant plays as well as he did, they're going to have to get more than one performance off the bench tonight to win this game. I'd love to see it. I think it's an opportunity for BYU to really, I get the feeling that some people don't think BYU belongs.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
You know, like that little WCC conference is where BYU belongs.
Yeah.
It's an interesting.
There's a fair amount of hate for BYU, but I think that's drowned out by the absolute love of BYU.
I think there's a lot of bit of hate around BYU.
Yeah.
I think there always has been. I think there's a good bit of the Mormons. You know, those weird Mormon guys that don't have sex or drink caffeine, or I think there's always going, that's always going to be there. But when you're in the WCC and you're in a league with teams like St. Mary's, and you are not thought of as a basketball powerhouse, I think it's interesting that you beat a team like St. Mary's, and now you're going to run into a Gonzaga in the championship game, and you're going to have this opportunity to put yourself in the NCAA tournament. And you're going to have this opportunity to say, we can play with anybody. We can play with Gonzaga. We can play with a national championship caliber club. I think that's why tonight is really important. Maybe I'm overstating it. Maybe I'm making too much of this, Mountain West Conference relationship kind of thing. But I really think
it's a huge opportunity. There's no doubt about it.
For basketball. And I know that I talk a lot of BYU, and they're just a very compelling story. BYU as a football school is a brand. They're an absolute nameplate.
They're a powerhouse for TV wise, brand wise. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. They're bringing you, and I always say this, and I know you just fans hate me for this, but it's a million viewers every time they're on TV.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be Taysom jumping over, you know, Texas Longhorns on Fox, or BYU is a draw. Basketball-wise, I think they're an unknown. I think they're an underrated property.
Yeah.
I think Dave Rose is an underrated head coach. There's a lot of people who would like to see Dave Rose replaced, even in BYU circles. I don't know how you look at the coaching job that he has done over the course of this season and think that he's the problem.
Right.
I think Dave Rose has navigated some landmines that I don't know how many other coaches would have been able to navigate. And I think it's one of those deals where BYU will forever be underrated as a basketball program. And it'll be interesting for my money anyway. I am really interested to see how BYU handles this thing tonight. How does BYU come out and play against Gonzaga? Do you expect them to win?
I expect it to be tight. I think in games like
so
this...
So you don't expect them to win?
It's not that No, I guess I don't expect them to win. I expect it to be a tight game. I don't think you can... You can never say, well, in a championship game with a lot on the line, with conference implications on the line, with... You know, the national tournament on the line. No, you're not going to say, well, I expect BYU to win or I expect Gonzaga to win. It's going to be a tight game. These are the games where this is game 7 of the World Series, essentially, for this sport. And at this point, it's whoever makes the least mistakes will win the game. It's that simple. Whoever turns the ball over less, whoever makes more shots will win the game. And that's what it comes down to. So saying that, saying that I expect somebody to win, you don't get here by being an average team. I mean, sure, they're an underdog, but that's a publicity thing, not a talent thing, in my opinion. So, yeah.
That's a perception, not a reality.
Yeah.
I would totally agree with that. But it'll be fun. I hope BYU wins this game. By the way, I also think it would go a long way for Dave Rose. Because the irony is not lost on me that Larry Krzyzkowiak is the coach of the year in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
And now Dave Rose potentially, with a win tonight, upsets the apple cart.
Got to win.
Right? Like, this is the ultimate, maybe this is the ultimate, that team down south, you know, sticking a burr under the saddle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's
but those are the underlying, those are the underlying things that players and coaches play the game for. You're playing to win the game, but those little nuances are icing on the cake.
Yeah, I agree. Let's wrap the show today with two subjects. The Bachelor coming up, but you, Darvish, right now. Jake and I were at Sloan Park in Mesa today watching the Cubs and the Dodgers. First of all, I love you, Los Angeles. I enjoyed my time living in LA, and I have a lot of family and friends that still live in LA. I'm not a fan of Dodger fans. I'm really not a fan of Dodger fans.
Say no more.
Yeah, probably I should stop. I should stop. It was obnoxious today at Sloan Park. There were a lot of Dodger fans there. But you, Darvish, pitched pretty well today. 95 on the gun. Was throwing all of his pitches, which I hate. But I thought he pitched pretty well today for the Cubs. And he said something interesting after the game today. He said, I lost weight.
Was this like the offseason of guys losing a bunch of weight for the Cubs? Or like
apparently.
That, you know?
But Yu Darvish said he lost weight because of what happened in the World Series.
Okay, well, I'm glad he's got a reason, because he got absolutely just destroyed in the World Series. So.
Well, the inference is he was out of shape, and his velocity was down in the World Series.
So is that why he was tipping pitches, too?
He doesn't necessarily agree he was tipping pitches.
Okay, well, he can disagree with that. But all I'm saying is, as a pitcher, you can deny the fact that you were tipping pitches. They knew what was coming. That much is very clear.
Yeah, well... And the ball was going.
A long way.
They knew what was coming, yeah. Were you surprised that he was so open about losing this weight? And
I mean, first off, I didn't notice that he lost some good amount of weight.
Well, you haven't seen him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he hasn't been out there, but I think it hasn't been a storyline until now. He just came out and said it, so it's not a huge amount
of
weight.
Well, it's not. He was asked. Yu Darvish just didn't throw out there, hey, yeah, I lost weight. He was asked after the game, hey, you look thinner.
Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, if that's what he felt like he needed to do to be a better pitcher, then I like that he's talking about it, and I like that he did it. I mean, oftentimes when you lose weight as a pitcher or as a guy like Kyle Schwarber, your performance goes up. And I think it's not just that you lost the weight. It's that to lose the weight, you have an improved diet. You have an improved strength and conditioning program. You're doing all those things to supplement your performance.
This goes back to your point. And I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm 100% sincere. I think Japanese pitchers and Pacific Rim pitchers from Korea, from Japan, I think they don't understand the load. And I think they don't understand what is required physically to be a Major League Baseball pitcher, because it's not the same in the KBO, in the Japanese Professional League.
No.
It's not the same. And so Yu Darvish losing weight and getting his velo back, I think, is a big deal.
And I think my main point with that is that I think the talent level being a little bit lower overseas allows them to take it a little bit easier. They don't have to do as much to dominate.
Correct.
So when you come to Major League Baseball and you're facing world-class talent, I mean, you have to be in the best shape of your life. You have to be in a position where you're playing the best ball of your career. And if he wasn't there, yet he got to the World Series and got a start, what does that tell you about his future with the Cubs? It's pretty bright.
By the way.
Yeah.
This is Bush, the people that we love.
I know.
Gavin Rossdale, who's the lead singer of what used to be Bush. I mean, I loved this band growing up. The Golden State is one of the greatest albums ever. Anyway, I loved what I saw out of Yu Darvish today. I really liked what I saw out of Chris Bryant. Anthony Rizzo looked really good at the plate. He looked really good at first base. Almora Jr. in center field made two ridiculous plays. I really feel good about this team. I want to see more from the starting rotation. I need John Lester not to be bounce throwing balls over to first base. That makes me nervous as hell.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about John Lester. I love what they've done with the rotation, that Hendricks is second. I really like that.
He needs to back it up now.
He does need to back that up.
And I'm not saying he won't. I think there's a great shot that he will.
Well, you know, did you hear that Kyle Hendricks changed his grip on his curveball? Hendricks changed. If you don't read The Athletic, dude, you're just killing yourself. Kyle Hendricks changed the grip on his curveball and says it's got more dynamic downward action now. And he says he just loves it. It's a much better curveball for him. And I'm like, hey, hell yeah, because your curveball was already pretty good, bro.
That's not the pitch that makes or breaks him, though. His changeup is what makes or breaks him, and I think the curveball can only help him if
fastball
it's
fastball location and changeup action is what makes Kyle.
I mean, when his changeup is good, he's as good as anybody.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Can we talk about The Bachelor before we leave?
Wait, what's that? I don't watch that show.
I don't get it. I don't get it. And I'm not saying that this is a man thing, that it's I'm a man, I can't watch The Bachelor because I have testosterone. That's not my point. Women have testosterone too, by the way. Anyway, point is,
right,
I don't understand why people love The Bachelor. Help me understand this. It's a dude giving away...
Dude.
It's a dude giving away roses and essentially saying, I'm not giving you this rose because you're ugly and she's not. I've watched it 5 times in my life, and it's the greatest hypocrisy in Hollywood.
And
why?
We wonder why women get treated the way they do.
But why is it a great hypocrisy? Because it's the essence of the Me Too movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what I talked about, and now I know it's different. I know it's different. I talked about this with Kobe yesterday.
Right.
And that Kobe and the rape allegations in Eagle, Colorado, he gets a free pass on that. Ryan Seacrest, nobody's going to talk to him on the red carpet because he's, allegedly sexually harassed.
Allegedly.
He's allegedly sexually harassed a stylist. Yet we laud and celebrate and rejoice at The Bachelor. Maybe I'm just a stick in the mud. I look at The Bachelor as the sexualization, the creation of something that is completely false about women.
Right.
I'm the guy who says porn is the great destroyer of men. I don't watch porn. I don't believe guys should watch porn.
Right.
I think sex kills men in this country. It kills integrity. It kills confidence.
I just don't think the show itself is not... Obviously, it's not realistic, but I think for people who for younger people. I'm talking about teenagers who love this show. It gives them false expectations. Like, hey, I'm a girl. Me and all my little friends can go, you know, show ourselves to Johnny. And he'll pick the best one, and it'll be me. I know that.
That's what they do at the Bunny Ranch, where they have all the hookers line up, and you're like, oh, well, I like brunettes, so all the blondes can step back.
Yeah.
Like, it's this selection. Like, the women...
Hello.
Should I go here or not? Like, because I'm trying like hell not to do this. But women are not, they are, there is something very physical about the way men look at women.
Huh?
Oh, gotta have that. Oh, man. Okay. Like this story out of ESPN where, you know, Jonathan Coachman today, the coach, who's back in the WWE, but was on ESPN. There's a story that, in a narrative that goes around that the men of ESPN, guys like Chris Berman, John Buchegross, Jonathan Coachman is one of the guys that's been involved in that.
Yeah.
That they would essentially groom women for their sexual gratification. That they would say, oh, hey, look at her. Oh, hands off, she's mine. And it's been just crushed by everybody.
Yeah, it's well documented.
And it's been, hey, ESPN is a meat market. There was this lawsuit that came out the other day. Again, just like the Dallas Mavericks, all of the men in the newsroom were openly watching porn on their computers. And it's like, okay, that's so wrong. Yet The Bachelor is celebrated, and it's got huge ratings, and it's this pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just an a-hole. Maybe I'm an old man. Maybe I'm a stick in the mud.
No, I mean, look, I don't think you are. I think in this conversation, I don't think you are. I mean, you can't watch that kind of a show and then be pissed off about what's going on at ESPN.
It's
happening in both ways.
Now, The Bachelor's voluntary. These women sign up. They want to get famous.
It's not about
TV.
That.
I get
it. It's about the premise.
But it's about the theology, the theory.
Yeah.
The reason you're doing this. You're doing this to glorify sex in women.
Yeah.
You're doing this for this woman's TNA. You're doing this because she's got a great rack. Ah, she's amazing. That's why The Bachelor works.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's wrong with The Bachelor. It's why I think Glee is one of the worst television programs in the history of network TV. We let our young teen daughters watch Glee and we thought that was okay. I never watched that show. It disgusted me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just don't get it. Anyway, I'll stop. Today is National Oreo Cookie Celebration Day.
Yes. Yes.
Admittedly, I'm fat and I love Oreos.
We.
Two Oreos and Goose.
Yes.
Jake, what is your favorite Oreo? If I said you can only pick one, what's your favorite
Double
Oreo?
Double Stuffed Golden all day long. Sorry, dude. It's
so
that
you're
simple.
You're stealing
I'm not
my...
stealing yours. It is our shared passion for Oreos.
It's been months since I had an Oreo.
Yeah.
Months.
Yeah.
But looking at some of the best flavors that I've had...
Okay, pumpkin spice has to be up there on the list.
Pumpkin spice is there. Banana split is there. I don't know how to say this without just really upsetting some people, and I apologize in advance. I don't like straight chocolate regular Oreos. Like just the...
Yeah.
I don't... I'm sorry. Cookie dough. I loved the cookie dough Oreo when they were out. It was out for a very small time. The birthday cake Oreo.
Fire.
Is absolutely fire. I don't like chocolate Oreos. I agree with you that the double stuffed golden Oreo.
Bomb.
Is absolutely incredible. The peanut butter Oreo was a huge letdown. Huge letdown. I didn't like it. Heads or tails, which is golden on one side, chocolate wafer on the other side, really a disappointment. Why would you ruin a golden Oreo with chocolate on one side? I don't understand it.
I don't know.
But I think the coup de grace. I think the Oreo that I'm going to give my final rose to, I think the Oreo that deserves...
The Bachelor, 5 o'clock, it's National Oreo Day.
Is lemon.
No.
The lemon...
No.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
Come on.
Dude. The lemon Oreo.
Dude, I'll eat all the golden ones on my own, then. I don't care.
The lemon Oreo is special.
I don't care.
It is spectacular.
It's special to you, and that's why it's going to get your rose. I'm going to get mine.
I'm getting mine. Follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake. Talk about me. Killers talking about me. It ain't no talk about me. It ain't no walking around me. See all these killers around me.